Well, today I'm going to be talking about our Australian classification system. It's been mentioned once or twice already today how that's one response that that nations or jurisdictions have to media violence and other kinds of content that are considered problematic. Hang on, I've just got to put this down. That we classify content. And so I'm going to be looking in some detail at exactly how we do that in Australia, and in particular I'm going to be looking at some recent decisions of the Classification Review Board. Now, I've chosen the Review Board because those decisions are easier to get to, and there are a few of them, so they're easier to study. There is a future study, I think, that I will do sometime soon about the basic classification decisions themselves. But in the meantime, I've found it really interesting to look at what the Classification Review Board has said and how it has dealt with violence. And I was very glad that Doug referred a minute ago to this idea of, well, some kinds of violence seem to be more problematic, seem to raise more of a risk or to be a higher or stronger risk factor for different kinds of negative outcomes in terms of people's thoughts and attitudes and behaviour. Are we having some trouble connecting that? Okay. Just as long as I know it's not my fault. Anyway, I'll just keep talking and we'll see if we can catch up with the picture soon. So first of all, I'm going to be looking at the evidence. What are the kinds of depictions of violence that are of greater concern than others? And then looking at the classification scheme itself and the guidelines under that scheme, and what kinds of depictions are seen as having greater and lesser impact, both, as I say, in the guidelines, but also in the way that decisions are actually made by the Classification Review Board. And then looking at, well, how do these two things line up? What we know from the science about what kinds of depictions we should be more concerned about and what kinds of depictions the decision makers are in fact more concerned about. And then finally, I'll have a few recommendations about things that we could maybe consider doing with our classification system so that it improved the alignment between those two things. Okay, so as far as I've been able to gather from a few studies that my colleagues in the front row here have kindly provided to me over the last little while, the kinds of depictions of violence that the research tells us we should be more concerned about are the following. Violence that seems like real life. Violence that's committed by a character with, and I'm quoting here, overall attractiveness, power and charisma, or hero status. Any violence committed by such a person is more likely to desensitize or to have one of those adverse outcomes. Violence that's rewarded and violence that is unpunished, they're also of greater concern. Then violence committed with characters with whom the viewer can identify. So that's not necessarily a heroic character, but somebody who's similar in age, gender and or race to the person who's viewing the material. And then violence that's portrayed as justified. So those are some of the basic ones that there seems to be a bit of consensus in the scientific community of concern. There's a few others that also seem to be of some concern, but I think from my impression there's not as strong a consensus about them, but they're worth noting anyway. Violence that seems likely to cause moderate to extreme harm, so something to do with the degree of harm likely to come from the violence, whether the violent act is repeated many times within one scene, whether the violence appears to cause pain. Violence that doesn't appear to cause pain is seen to present a greater risk, and also violence that doesn't appear to cause harm. Okay. Violence that's depicted... explicitly. Violence that's depicted explicitly, so, for example, a close-up of violence is of greater concern. If it's depicted in a graphic way, and the piece that I read gave the example of the amount of blood and gore would be an indicator of how graphic it is. And finally, the use of weapons seems to be a stronger risk factor. Okay, so there's my example of maybe some of those things that we were just talking about before. I know it's a bit of a dated example, but it's one that I know for sure is a kind of media representation of violence that does tend to show little harm, little pain, no blood or gore normally, and we probably tend to think that that's less significant or of less concern, but in fact the literature might suggest that it was. And I'll just show you the other image that I had up there that I wasn't able to show you a minute ago. So going back to my original list of the kinds of violence where there seems to be a stronger consensus, that image there seems to pick up quite a lot of those themes. So that, you know, the violence is glamorised, it's rewarded, it's committed by two characters with overall attractive power and charisma, and of course superhero violence is by definition portrayed as justified as well, because it's always, you know, the superhero is always the good guy. Anyway, so getting on now to looking at our classification scheme, just a few basic facts about it for those of you who aren't aware, or just to pull it together for those of you who might have heard these things. It's based on an agreement between the Commonwealth, the states and the territories, which makes it an act of sort of legal and legislative genius, but it also makes it quite difficult to change. We have a national code that applies right throughout the country, but then it's enforced by the states and territories. It covers publications, films and computer games. I'm just going to be focusing on films and computer games for today. It does have some role in classification of TV and online content, but I won't go into that. That's a bit more complex, but it does have a role there. Now, an R18 plus classification was added for games in 2012. Up until then, we didn't have that classification. We only went as far as MA15 plus. And there are two different types of classification. Some are advisory only and some are restrictive. And that's something I think the general public is not necessarily aware of. But G, PG and M are only advisory, and then from MA15 up, they're restrictive. They're based on two important concepts. One is the elements, one of which is violence, but there's also sex, nudity, language, drug use, themes and so on. You're probably all quite familiar with those. So those are called classifiable elements. And then the other concept is impact, and the system tries to measure the impact of the content in relation to whichever element it is that you're talking about at that time. Now, in considering impact, here are some of the matters to be considered. First of all, there's the standards of morality, decency and propriety, generally accepted by reasonable adults. Then there's the literary, artistic or educational merit of the content. So we've got the morality, decency and propriety thing, then we've got the merit, is it sort of a great piece of art, for example. Then the general character of the content, including whether it's a medical, legal or scientific character. And then finally, the persons or class of persons that it's going to be published to. Then we've got, alongside all of those things, the matters to be considered, we've got these principles that are part of the guidelines and should be taken into account in all of these decisions. One is that adults should be able to read, hear and see what they want. So you've got your basic freedom of expression type consideration there, but from the point of view of the audience, not of the person making the communication. Secondly, that minors should be protected from material likely to harm or disturb them. Thirdly, everyone should be protected from exposure to material they find offensive. And then finally, this reasonably complicated one, but it basically boils down to taking account of community concerns, and you can see that violence, and particularly sexual violence, are mentioned right there. So that really shows that violence has a central role to play in this classification system, and there's absolutely no doubt that it sort of runs right through the classification system. You know, we care about violence, we're concerned about violence, we want to do something about it and limit access to violent content, at least some of the time. Now, I'll just run briefly through the guidelines so you get a sense of how it all builds up. For the G classification, violence should have only a low sense of threat or menace. For PG, it should be mild and infrequent and be justified by context. You'll see that keeps getting mentioned in a lot of these classifications. For M, moderate violence is permitted. For MA15+, there's no modifier, although the word strong is sometimes used for the kind of violence that's acceptable at MA15+. And I'll just note briefly, there's an extra little sentence there in the guidelines for games that doesn't exist in relation to films, and that's because of that recent change and the fact that the decision makers recognised the need to have some extra guidelines there, but didn't really sort of do a very sort of thorough job of cleaning it all up. So they just sort of threw in a couple of extra little extra little words and sentences there. But basically, you've still got that justified by context. For R18 plus, just violence is permitted, and no need for it to be justified by context. And then again, we've got that extra statement in relation to games. And then finally, for RC, there's a little bit of stuff there, and I'm going to let you read that, and I'm going to get myself a drink of water. So RC is basically material that is not allowed to be shown or sold or rented in Australia. And that's the kind of material that's covered. Now, in the guidelines, we're told what are the things that will make impact higher. So these are the things that are actual written instructions to classifiers. Here are the things that you really should be taking into account when you're assessing impact. So the first one is detail, including close-ups and slow motion, accentuation techniques that enhances impact, using special effects, lighting, sound, etc. If it's prolonged, if the content containing the classifiable element is prolonged, if it's repeated frequently, and if it's realistic rather than stylized, and do take note of that because that question of something being stylized will come up later. And finally, if it encourages interactivity. Now, the Classification Review Board has reviewed the classification of 30 films and games since 2011, and I've limited it to cinema release. There was one online film, but I just excluded that for these purposes. So we've got 30 decisions that have been made since 2011. There's roughly equal numbers of industry and ministerial applications. So industry would normally apply for a lower classification, in fact, always applies for a lower classification than was originally given. And if the minister's applying, then you can bet that it's because a higher classification is considered appropriate. As I said, roughly equal numbers. Now, I think that makes it an unusual period. I think that normally there would be a lot more applications by industry than by the government. But during this period, there were 13 games that the South Australian Attorney General applied for review of that was following the introduction of R18 plus, basically to test, now we've got these new guidelines, does that mean that we've got stuff sitting in MA that was previously classified at MA that really should now be R18 plus since we've changed the guidelines? So there were 13 of those, which was how we got that sort of just about half of the 30 overall, that there was this big bump in 2013. Now, all of the industry applications but two were successful. That is where they wanted the classification to be brought down. The review board brought it down in all but two cases. In cases where the minister was applying for a higher classification, all but one of those was unsuccessful. So you see there's almost completely inverse results from these two types of applications. Now, I'm not going to draw any conclusions from that, but I do think it's worth noting and worth reflecting on further. But from now on, I'm just going to focus on the 22 of those decisions where violence was at least one of the main classifiable elements. So the other eight were about language or themes or sex or nudity or something like that. Now, when I say 22 decisions, I'm including two decisions. Well, I'm counting as two decisions, the majority and minority in one case, because the review board split and there were two separate decisions. But I'm treating them as two parts of the count for these purposes. So it was 21 items, but 22 decisions. And what I did was I went through the reports that had been put out by the review board in all of these cases, and I said, what kinds of adjectives are they using to describe the content here? And in particular, which are the adjectives that are seen to lessen the violence, lessen the impact, and which are the ones that are seen to enhance it? And if you remember, in the vast majority of these cases, the ultimate decision was in favour of a lower classification. So nearly all of the language that's used is justifying that lower classification. And so all of these adjectives, well, not all, but nearly all the time, the adjectives are being used to express a view that the violence is less important than it would be otherwise, or of less concern. So here's what we found. In 13 decisions, there were references to realistic or unrealistic. I put those together because they're just two sides of the same coin. So they referred to the realism or otherwise of the classification, of the violence, and that seemed to be, well, that was the most common theme that came out, or the most common language that was used. Then I lumped together a range of adjectives that referred in some way to the genre or the theme of the content. And I've got a couple of examples there. It was action violence, or there was superhero violence, or just some way of sort of modifying the violence that seemed to refer to the overall genre or the theme of the content at the time the violence was included. Then there were 9 decisions that referred to stylized. Now, you might recall when I had the guidelines up before, it says one of the guidelines is to do with whether the violence is realistic rather than stylized. So it does set up stylized as being the opposite of realistic. So maybe I should have included stylized in that first line and said, well, we've got, you know, maybe not 22 decisions, but more decisions that use the term stylized and or realistic and or unrealistic. But I've counted them separately because when you read these decisions, it's not entirely clear just what is meant by stylized and just how it's being used. And I did have some sort of ground for a degree of skepticism about whether it was really being used as the antithesis of realism, that I think it might have been really something else. So, that's the next one. Next was 8 decisions referred to, used language and various adjectives that referred to the level of detail in the violent content. And then there were 5 that referred to the tone in some way. And the example I've pulled out there is slapstick, but we also had cartoony violence and comic violence, that sort of thing. So it's more about the tone rather than the theme or the genre quite so much. Then there were 4 decisions that referred to the frequency of the violence, normally saying it's infrequent, therefore we give the lower classification, but there was that reference to frequency there. 3 decisions referred specifically to blood, or more likely absence thereof, again to justify a lower classification. And 3 decisions that looked at the perspective, that is, you know, was it a close-up, was it, there was one particular decision where they described it as being a shot from way above the action, and that seemed to lessen the impact of the violence. And then finally there were 2 decisions that spoke of the familiarity. They said, oh, well, this is a really familiar kind of violence, you know, it's the kind we've all seen before, which, only 2 of them, but still something I thought worth noting. Now, I've got another whole list of adjectives and terms that were used that I wasn't able to classify in any way, so we'll call this my miscellaneous list, but I still think it's kind of interesting to look through. There they all are. So the word virtual, this is only virtual violence, as if that somehow changes things, the fact that it's alien violence, the fact that the combination of moves that was needed in a game to get the violent outcome was difficult. That was seen as, that was actually in the minority report that I mentioned before. But anyway, there it is. The fact it was non-interactive, the fact it was fantastical, the fact that it was implausible and unlikely. That again was in relation to that game where apparently it's very difficult to get those horrible results. And I have a feeling, don't quote me, but I have a feeling that the game being referred to there is the same one we saw earlier with the woman being torn into. I think it was that same one. The fact that the victims weren't human was referred to, and then finally this one was fascinated me, the fact that the violence was paying homage to a particular style that was sort of, you know, well accepted in some pantheon somewhere, I suppose, was seen as significant. And then finally this was the only one on my miscellaneous list that was seen as increasing the impact of the violence. All of those were used to lessen the impact of the violence, but saying that the level of detail emphasised and humanised the context, that was seen as enhancing the impact of the violence. And again, I think that was from that same game. Okay, so here's my analysis, and I like colour coding things, so that's what I've done here. The things that I've got in dark green, and if that's dark, I hope you're going to be able to see light, but we'll see how we go. These are all of the things that I saw mentioned in these decisions that I think do have some basis in the scientific literature that I was able to get access to. So referring to whether things are realistic or unrealistic, I think that does seem to have some basis, because that was one of the first things that I mentioned, is if the violence seems like real life violence, then that would be a reason to say that's more serious. Although it must be said that usually in these decisions, the language was, it's not realistic, therefore it's lower. So it's not seen that realism is enhancing it, more that unrealism is lowering the impact. And also the level of detail, the perspective, close-ups and so on, and the portrayal of blood. I think they all have some basis in the literature of saying, yes, this enhances the impact of the violence. Okay, there's my light green. I hope you can see that. Saying that the violence is stylized, as I say, they might mean the same thing as unrealistic, but I think they actually don't. I'd love to do some more analysis on that, which I haven't had time to do as yet, but I would put stylized in the maybe camp, so that's why I've got light green. It's like, you know, maybe that fits with the with the literature, but I'm not quite sure. And then finally, frequency. Now, the reason I've got frequency as light green is because from what I saw in the literature, it's about repetition within one scene. That's what frequency means there. Whereas in the classification discussions, it seems to be more a matter of, well, how much of the film overall is taken up with violence? And there was a classic example a few years ago of one of the Harry Potter films, which is like 3 hours long, that had one or two really sort of serious, violent, scary scenes, but they the classification was kept at the lower level because it was such a long film, and in the context of such a long film, this violence was not frequent. So if you measure violence in that way as being against the length of the film, I think that's not quite what comes out in the literature. So that's why I'd put that as light green, maybe not exactly what the literature would suggest. And those are a few things that I saw mentioned many times. Well, the familiarity only twice, but even so, I found that quite extraordinary, so I included it. But things to do with the genre or theme come up a lot in the classification decisions, but they don't really seem to have any basis at all in the literature from what I've been able to see. And similarly, the tone of the violence, saying that it's slapstick or cartoony or something like that, I've seen nothing to suggest that lessens the impact of violence. As for the other adjectives, okay, I've got the light green up there first, saying that it's non-interactive or that the victims aren't human, I think that might be able to be related to the literature, but maybe not as clearly as the emphasising and humanising one that I mentioned before. That really seems to line up with what the literature says, but yeah, maybe the non-interactive thing, yeah, maybe, but not quite sure. But those are all the things that I would put on the red list, as in, no, they don't really seem to line up with what the literature says. That is, the idea of it's virtual, that it's alien, all of those things, they don't really seem to have any basis in the literature. So I guess we can say that we're doing okay with the review board decisions. There do seem to be some sort of themes coming out of those decisions that are consistent with the literature, but we're not as far as we could get in doing that. That's one other thing I wanted to draw attention to. It came up in the context of X-Men Apocalypse, which is out fairly recently. And there is just a little bit of a quote from what they've said. In all the scenes, the violence is justified by the context of either demonstrating superhero powers or is part of the damage inflicted in the war between superheroes. These images are justified by the context of a superhero battle. Now, when I read that phrase justified by context in the guidelines, I had always thought that it meant justified by the storyline in the sense of you need to have an act of violence to sort of move the storyline along at that particular point, rather than it being justified overall by the genre, if you like, and to say, well, look, it's a superhero movie, of course it's violent. That's justified by the context. So I think there might be an idea in some of these decisions that the context you're looking at to see if the violence is justified by context is the whole genre and not the particular point that you're at in the storytelling. And I think that might be something that should be addressed because that doesn't really seem to be a way of lessening the impact of the violence at a particular time. Another thing that I found over and over and over again in these decisions was this use of the language accommodating. So here's an example of where it was used, again, in that same report, but over and over again in nearly all of these reports, I'd say, use this sort of language to say, the impact of this element is no higher than moderate and can be accommodated at the M level. which to me is language that says we are going to try to get things into the lowest level we can. And that's certainly, if that is the thought process, it's certainly played out in the results that I told you about before, where the vast, vast majority of these decisions have resulted in a lower, or in the lower of the two classifications that were sort of on offer. So that's something that is really worth spending a bit of time on, I think. Because if you go back and remember what the principles are that I laid out, there's principles about protecting children from material likely to harm or disturb them, and making sure that adults are allowed to see, hear, read and play whatever they want, and those sorts of things. There was no suggestion that any one of those principles trumps the others. That, to me, it looks like a list of equal principles that all need to be weighed up, and the right decision needs to be reached after weighing up all of those decisions. So it looks to me like it really should be a balancing approach, and yet what it seems like you've got here is a bit of an invisible thumb on the scales saying, well, if you can possibly justify the lower classification, that's what you get. And I really wonder if that's consistent with the guidelines. So that's another thing that I think could be looked at a bit more closely. Now, I'm using the word dissonance with some trepidation, considering that the presence of all these psychologist colleagues in the audience who have a much better idea of what that means than I do. But that is how I interpret it, is there's something going wrong here, that you know, what's being heard is not the same thing as what's being said. And so what's going on? Now, I think a large part of the problem with our system is that it's a system that's grown up out of the old law of obscenity. And that's a law that's very much related to morality and moralism. And the phrase that was used at common law in defining obscenity was material that has a tendency to deprave and corrupt. Now, you know, it's very moralistic language and a very moralistic way of looking at things. And that, I think, is in tension with the idea of looking at, well, what does the science say? I mean, science is not a moralistic judgment. It's science. And so if we wanted to have a system that was aligned with science, we should really start pushing away from the moralistic roots of the system and try to put it on that firmer footing. But I think it's going to be a bit hard to do that as long as we have those concepts in the principles that are to do with propriety and decency and so on. And also, our system is based, at least in part, on looking at community concerns. Now, community standards, community concerns, you know, they're important, obviously, in public policy, and one needs to be concerned about those. But they're not scientific evidence. And I think there is a tendency to sort of get mixed up between those two things, and that when people try to talk about the scientific evidence and feed that into the classification system and say, well, what should the decisions be guided by? They should be guided by scientific evidence. That sometimes that message can be lost, and then we, you know, end up talking about community standards and concerns instead, which, as I say, are important but a separate thing. Third, it's worth noting that there's a lack of reference to industry interests either way in all of this. None of those guidelines or principles or matters for consideration that I read out said anything at all about the industry. And yet, industry interests are a really, really important factor in the day-to-day running of this system. And in particular, the fact that they're the ones who pay to have the classifications done. And I'm not sort of suggesting that leads to any kind of undue influence, but it's just really kind of interesting how we don't have a statement either way about the significance or otherwise of industry interests in any of this decision-making. Now, here are my recommendations. How could we get out of these? Out of these difficulties that I've identified. First of all, looking at the classifiable elements. I would suggest having another look at the fact that we include sex, nudity and language in the same breath as we include violence. Because as far as I know, I mean, sex might be a little bit different. I think there is some research on it, you know, early exposure to sexual activity in the media and how that might influence young people's behaviour later. But just they do sort of all seem to carry that more of that sort of community standards, moralism kind of weight to them, rather than the scientific evidence about harm to development weight. And it might be worth thinking about if we can separate those two things out a bit. Now, before you get too nervous about reviewing sex, I would suggest maybe also considering adding things like stereotyping and objectification. Now, these are things that I think you know, they're ideas whose time has come, and you know, for lots of reasons, I think they should be included in our classification system. But in this particular context, in that it's sort of getting that that message much more clearly out there about how the classification system is about measuring risks of harm to children and young people, then including things that are more sort of modern, publicly accepted morality concepts like stereotyping and objectification that we can link back to human rights instruments and so on, might sort of change the calibration of the message so that it is easier to have the scientific message sitting alongside the community standards morality message, because it's a more sort of up-to-date, better-founded community standards morality message. Just something to think about. I'm not saying it has to happen tomorrow, but a few ideas. Okay, as for the guidelines, here's what I would recommend. I've already pointed out how realism and detail are things that are fairly well founded in the literature, and so it would make sense to keep those as elements in the guidelines. I would suggest removing anything to do with morality or decency or propriety. Also, the question of merit. I'm really not sure that that has any particular clear role to play. If we want to have a proper evidence-based classification system, then I'm not sure where merit comes into it. Same thing with the general character of the content, the tone of the content, the special effects in the content, that none of them seem to really have any role to play in helping us decide whether there's a high risk of children and young people being harmed. I would suggest actively excluding genre. It's currently not included, and it's not mentioned one way or the other, but we've seen that it does get used in classification decisions, and I would suggest that we have a proper, you know, well, an explicit statement to say the genre doesn't matter. A few things just to be clarified. As I've said, stylized, not entirely sure what that means, and how it's used in the classification decision-making process. So let's clarify that, be a bit clearer on what it means. Also, justified. I've talked about how my understanding of justified by the context is quite different from what appears to be the review board's understanding of that concept. So let's clarify that, make sure that that's clear. And again, clarify it in a way that it's kept a link to the evidence about what's likely to harm children. Also, frequency. We've seen there are a couple of different concepts of frequency floating around, so let's get clear on that. And community concerns, let's be clear about, you know, what their role is and how we establish what they are and how much weight we give them. Also, detail and accentuation are a couple of things that could just do with a bit of clarification. And then there are a few things I think should be added. And coming back to one of my very first points, glamorised violence. We don't have a way of addressing glamorised violence. That really does need to be included because it's one of the things that seems to have a very strong basis in the literature. And also the idea of violence being rewarded or unpunished, that seems to have a very strong basis in the literature, and it doesn't come out in our guidelines or our system in any way, so I'd like to see that added. And also sanitised violence, so violence, you know, where there doesn't seem to be any harm, doesn't seem to be any pain, that's something that, again, has a basis in the literature, but we don't mention it one way or the other at the moment. Okay, that's where I'm going to leave it for now. I do have other things that I can discuss, of course, but I'm happy to leave it, and we'll come back to it all in questions. So thank you very much for your time.